I pretty carefully timed my absences from this pulpit so as to use them for having the flu. But as you can hear, I'm just getting a little bit over it, so bear with me. Not so many days ago, in the New York Times, there appeared an interview with the novelist George Saunders. Maybe you saw it. He is widely regarded as the best writer of his generation. And he was telling the interviewer a story about a flight he was taking from Chicago back to Syracuse, where he lives. At least that was the plan. As it turns out, the plane that he was on did not land in Syracuse. And his words in telling the story are just so good. I'll just read them to you with very slight editing to take the interviewer out of the picture. We were flying along, and I've got a guilty pleasure. I'm reading Vanity Fair, and I'm on my way home. And suddenly there's this crazy sound, like a minivan hit the side of the plane. And I thought, uh-oh, I'm not even going to look up. If I don't look up from the magazine, this is not happening. And then it happened again. Everyone starts screaming. The plane is making terrible metal in distress sounds. Black smoke, black like the Batman movie, starts streaming out of the fresh air nozzles over our heads. We turn back toward O'Hare, and there's that grid of Chicago, and I'm seeing it coming up really fast. The lights flicker, and the pilot comes on and tells everyone with panic in his voice to stay buckled. And there's this little 14-year-old boy next to me. He turns to me and says, "Sir, is this supposed to be happening?" And I remember thinking, no, 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 no. Just that one syllable, over and over. And the strongest thing was the sense of the seat right there in front of me. I thought, oh yeah, this body, I've had it all this time, and that is what's going to do it. That right there. I had assumed that if I was ever faced with death, I would handle it with aplomb. I would be present in the moment. I would make peace in the time I had left. But I could not even remember my own name. I was so completely not present. I was just the word no. Eventually, I managed to turn to the kid next to me and say that it was going to be okay, though I didn't think so. And there was a woman across the aisle, and finally, it was like coming out of a deep freeze. I could just reach over, and I took her hand. And that's how we were for the next several minutes, waiting to die. In the end, they did not crash into the streets of Chicago or plunge into the freezing lake, but they made it back safely to the runway. And there was all the emergency response equipment, but it wasn't needed. It turned out, in a detail that would have been pretty good in one of his own stories, they had nearly all died because the plane had flown into a flock of geese. But here is what Saunders says about the experience in the end. For 3 or 4 days after that, it was the most beautiful world. To have gotten back in it, you know. And I thought, if you could walk around like that all the time, to really have that awareness that it is actually all going to end, that is the trick. I wonder whether you have ever had an experience like that. I can tell you absolutely that I have. And when I think back on it, I remember exactly that feeling that Saunders is describing. When it's over, that feeling of near complete elation at the simple fact of being alive, being in the world and aware of it. I think the life of faith resembles that more than a little. For the most part, it is mundane. and quotidian and routine, and nothing especially remarkable, like a Sunday morning in the middle of January in a rainy Newtonville. But then there are moments that come along in our lives when our faith seems vivid and alive, when the wall that usually separates us from a sense of God's presence becomes more like a very thin veil. Those moments take a lot of different forms. It can be when you get married or when your children are born. It can be when you witness some amazing act of grace in another person, or when you see an example of a kind of spiritual heroism that is both completely authentic and totally admirable. It can be when you get confirmed. It can be when you get ordained. It can be when you take a hike in the mountains and suddenly come upon this vista that's just opening in front of you. It can take a lot of different forms, as many different forms as there are people, I suppose. Most of us get baptized too young to remember the experience. But I suppose, ideally, that would be our experience of what our baptism was like. It would be this heightened sense of our awareness of God's presence, God's activity in our lives. It does seem to be the experience Jesus had. In Luke's account, he's baptized along with a bunch of other people by John in the Jordan River. We hear about this crowd and Jesus among the crowd. And then there's this moment when this is what the text says: the heavens opened. And we know what happens next. There's this moment that I learned in seminary to call a theophany, a moment in which the presence of God breaks into human experience in a way that is material and yet inexplicable. The burning bush is a theophany. The pillar of fire is a theophany. The descending dove and the voice are theophanies. But something else is actually more striking to me about these words. It's the lead-up phrase. It's the place where I deliberately cut off my little reference to this text in your leaflet. Jesus gets baptized in the Jordan River, so water is involved. He gets wet. The symbolism is about repenting. It's about being cleansed. And then what happens? These are the words: the heavens opened. And what is usually happening when you hear those words, the heavens opened? Rain, right, rain, torrential rain, a lot of water, an overflow, a surplus of water. It seems almost as though we're hearing in this same idea, the same idea that Saunders has about this superabundance of life, the incredible, prodigious, profligate presence of God. It isn't just a little water to get wet in. It's that when we come toward God in the waters of baptism, God completely showers us with blessing and possibility and presence. Wouldn't it be great to keep that alive, as Saunders says? Isn't the real trick to stay in that place somehow, whatever it was for you, and to keep it alive every day? I once had the privilege, I use that word loosely, of baptizing someone in a river. It was not the Jordan River. It was the Concord River by the old North Bridge. I had a seminarian in those days who, for some reason, had gotten all the way into divinity school without getting baptized. And so he decided that the time had finally come. He had resisted, obviously, for a long time, and we had that age-old conversation about whether getting baptized was the mark of some kind of achievement, or rather just a new kind of beginning. He held out for the first idea, I held out for the second, and finally, of his own volition, he came to me to ask me to baptize him. But the condition was, he wanted nothing of the frilly, fussy font. He wanted a full-blown, let's go down to the river and get baptized, baptism. So, on Easter Day, out to Concord we went, Ben and me, and a small gathering of puzzled well-wishers. And it was one of those years that Easter came early. Like late March, or maybe early April. Concord, Massachusetts, is not at all in the same latitude as Israel. Long story short, it is a vivid memory for me. The presence of God that day was not a warm presence, but it was real. It was profound. It was certainly vivid. Coming back up out of that river, everything in the world seemed sweeter and more colorful and more alive and certainly warmer. I think it's good to be reminded of those moments in our lives, because somehow simply bringing them back into our conscious awareness brings back as well the memory, that sense of the presence of God. In some churches, you get helped in that remembering sometimes by means of the priest showering you with a sprinkle of water. A reminder of your baptism, yes, but also a reminder of the possibility of God's presence in our lives at every moment, in every day, in every place. So, the invitation of Epiphany is to look for the places where the heavens open. It's to look for those experiences in which our coming toward God is received and responded to with a dramatic, profound response in kind. If we will just listen, if we will just look, if we will just be still and let the heavens open and rain down on us. Amen.